It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Today's podcast is brought to you in association with Athletic Greens. That's right, the Fight Disciples are going all healthy. As you know, with the lifestyles that we carry out, covering fight sports all over the world, it's quite difficult to maintain a healthy lifestyle, whether that comes down to training or eating the right stuff. Don't know about you, if you lead a similar life to us, I'm sick of eating beige food, and I can't wait to get home and eat some veg. But in the meantime, I'm going to need some supplements to keep me going, keep the old multivitamins keeping this bronzed body Adonis ticking over. So, what is this stuff? Now, one scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens. Don't ask me what they are, it's science. They help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and sleep. That's right, I'm turning into the Hulk. Taking all these different supplements with all their fancy labels can be exhausting. Athletic Greens is basically your all-in-one nutritional insurance. A scoop each day in some water covers all your nutritional bases. It tastes good, contains none of that nasty GMO stuff, and less than a gram of sugar in it. And it works out cheaper than blitzing through your local Holland & Barrett at only £2 per day. It's got 7,000 five-star reviews and countless professional athletes and fighters take it on a daily basis. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every single day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. So, to make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/fightdisciples. I'll say that again. athleticgreens.com/fightdisciples to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Hoo-ah!
This is Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast episode 591. We are the Fight Disciples. This one's dedicated to the world of boxing. If it's the first time you've ever come to us, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for. Fightdisciples.com is our website. We're all over social media. And of course, we like to do this on YouTube now, so therefore you can see us in the flesh. You get to see our faces as we are doing some talking. And 2 minutes ago, my partner in crime actually had his hood up. You're feeling a little bit rough from the weekend, aren't you? Eh? I won't mind, but you've only had one day of full drinking over the weekend. I've been out and about, mate. You know, I've been out and about in Leeds doing a bit of stag doing. Full sessions.
You did had you, one... I didn't know you were on a stag do.
Yeah, you've had one do, haven't you?
And I know, but I was fucking...
It's still Monday and you're fucked.
I am. Do you know what? I wasn't that bad yesterday, but I was up late last night watching fights, drinking cider, and I should have just had a night off it because I feel terrible today. I've got a sore throat. I feel just like a little old man. So
listen, I've come to some conclusions anyway over the weekend about football. Obviously,
go on.
It's not my first love. First love's fighting, right? But I've come to some conclusions over football. I have absolutely no problem at all with Liverpool winning all these trophies. None. At all. Do you know what I've got a problem with? You.
Me.
Yes. You. Right? I think it would be magnificent to see a football team in the modern era win every single trophy. That is something for history, man. I don't give a shit who it is. It'd be amazing to see. Plus, I kind of like sticking it to Man United, who keep bragging about 1999 and all that type of stuff. That would be pretty cool. I don't think I could take you. I think we might have to split this fucking podcast up for at least 6 months, mate, because you will be insufferable. You've gone out on a First of all, you've blagged a corporate from our mate, right? I know what you've done. You've blagged a corporate fucking do at the FA Cup final. You took your pal along. You've dressed like a fucking chav with your blue. You're in corporate, for fuck's sake. You turned up with your baseball cap on and your T-shirt thinking that you're fucking Billy Big Bollocks. You've had a full steak dinner, filled your face on champagne, right? You've stayed quiet for the whole match because, let's be honest, it was a shit FA Cup final. Yeah, your lads have scabbed it on a penalty shootout. And next thing you know, the greatest side in the world of all time ever, the quadruple chasing Reds. I'm like, that cunt's getting muted. Bumph. The best thing about it, right, the best thing about it is that I was watching the FA Cup final on a TV screen. Like I said, I'm on a stag do. Me and you aren't interacting throughout the course of the day. You're with your mates. You're enjoying Liverpool. Enjoy yourself. You're tagging me in posts to cause me shit. Why? Leave me alone. Where is he? What do you mean, where am I? I'm fuck all to do with this. Leave me alone. And then I've got all your little minions fucking jumping on going, yeah, Catterall, where are you now? What do you mean, where am I? Just fucking abusing me for no reason. That's what I can't take. So if you're a Liverpool fan watching this, I have no problem with you winning it. No problem with you dominating football. I like Jurgen Klopp. I think he's a fucking boss dude. I actually like a lot of your football players. I think you play some wicked football. I just can't take him. That's what it is. He's a fucking nightmare.
One. I didn't know you were on a stag do. In my defence, I thought he'll be on his way to Talk Sport Towers, and I was like that too, mate. I'm gonna ring up. I'm gonna get on the phone in, even if it's the Fight Sports Show, even if it's Fight Night. I'm gonna get on. I'm gonna give it the full mentality monsters. But yeah, man, it was. I'm glad you got abuse. I'm glad, because don't forget, what game was it? And you were sending me like yesterday. I didn't bite yesterday. When he went in at half time at West Ham, I didn't send you nothing.
This is yesterday, right? You don't want to fucking jump the gun, is what it were yesterday. Half time, I know that you were sat there with a fucking massive hard on. You've written your tweets out already and you're thinking, I'm ready. Just give me West Ham, just give me 45 minutes. That's all you want. Bastards. That's all you wanted. Anyway, it wasn't to be. Obviously, no. Penalty miss and all that type of shit. I'm not a City fan. I take my lad to watch City, right? I support Blackburn. They're shit. Abuse me over that if you want to abuse me over that. Jeez.
It's because you jumped on it the other week when I was messaging about Pep being a checkbook manager, being a silver spoon manager, and you were like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I was like, oh, okay. Okay, you've picked your sides. That's fine. That's fine. I was just stating facts.
How were you stating a fact? You said, right, what you've done.
He's a silver spoon manager. He's never done it.
Yeah, but that's not what you were saying. That's not what that I was picking holes in, right? I was picking holes in that you'd said, so last year he dropped 100 million on a player. That's true. Yeah. He did drop 100 million on a player in Jack Grealish.
On a forward, yeah.
On an attacking midfielder, right? So then you chip up and you say, so obviously that didn't work out. So now he's dropping 100 million on another forward. No, he's not. He's dropping 51 million euros. Is what he's dropping. Like, no.
Let's see, what's the agent getting?
I don't care. 51 million quid. Okay. I think it's 60 million euros, 51 million quid. That's what they're dropping, right? If you're going to put, let's be factual. Anyway, why have we started on? I've started on this because you're like,
I just want to talk quickly before we talk about boxing. I want to basically let the people know that I'm still a man of the people. Even though it probably appears on my Insta that I just ride that corporate game.
He does.
Big style.
He does. He loves he loves it. He loves the perks that come with being who he is, right? That's what he loves.
That is not the case at all. I couldn't get a ticket for the Liverpool end. I couldn't get one. There was none left.
Okay.
What
did you do?
I spoke to our mutual friend and he was able to make the magic happen. But I reluctantly drank that champagne and I reluctantly had that steak dinner.
I would much
rather have been in with the fans, paying £12 for a hot dog, paying £8 for a glass of, plastic glass full of beer. Somebody else went, listen, this is the only available to you is buckets of Corona and Budweiser, chilled, steak dinners, girls bringing over, like, you know, chorizo and breads and dips and all that stuff. And I just thought, you know, you've what? Changed, someone's got to do it. Someone has got to do it, man. Honestly. It was...
This podcast has gone to your head. I'm telling you, that's what it is. You've had 6 years of doing all right. And now look at you. When we started, we were nothing. And now look at you now. Eating fucking chorizo at football. Who the fuck are you?
Oh, man, it's fucking true. I'm embarrassing myself. But, listen, I went back. And then after the game, obviously, I stayed in the lounge until they literally volleyed us out. And then I went back to my people. I went back to Box Park, where the after fight...
The fucking Kings here.
Jesus. And we had a good sing and dance.
Yeah.
There you go. Still a man of the people. The best thing was, we end up in Box Park till like midnight or whatever. Then we get the tube back up by Camden. We were staying up by Camden. Mm. And we rocked into some bar. And we were obviously, we fucking absolutely gassed by then, like bladded. Singing, we running around London with the cup and all kinds. We walked into this bar and we got to the bar and he just went, just to check, you guys are here for speed dating? And you know, in just reaction, you just go,
amazing.
Yeah.
You said yes.
Yeah, of course we did. Well, I didn't know whether we'd find another bar that was open. Yeah, speed dating, yeah, no problem. Yeah, okay, get our drinks in, standing there, and then that was it. Then we just had an absolute scream, because obviously everybody in there is fucking desperate to fall in love. And so we just stood there, take the piss out of people fucking for the rest of the night.
Hang on.
Until we were asked to leave.
Did you do it? Did you go on speed dates?
Well, no, I went to sit down, and some fella come over and was like, you've got a wedding ring on. And I was just like, okay. Listen, if you're going to be funny about it, that's fine. Oh, dear. So, yeah, we finished our drinks and then we were asked to leave, which was fine. It's okay.
Tried to go speed dating with wedding ring on. What a fucking lad.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, you've had a good go there, haven't you? And now you're feeling a bit rough.
I feel terrible today, yeah. I feel awful.
So, let's... obviously, I've been out all weekend. You've been out all weekend. How much have you actually watched?
So, I watched, obviously, Friday night. I watched the stuff from Boxer yesterday. Mm. I watched Martin Bacoli.
Oh.
Absolutely batter Tony Yoker.
Okay.
I've pretty much seen everything.
Okay.
I've seen the Janineris mismatch. Hey, I tell you what, anyone that tuned into my prediction show on Friday on the YouTube channel,
there he is,
your motherfucking welcome, everybody. As predicted, late knockout for Charlo, as predicted in the UFC, a third round submission finish. Was it a submission? No, it was a retirement, a finish in favour of Jan Blachowicz. You're welcome, everybody. Chera, 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 ching! We all got paid.
Celebrates his victories, this lad. Loves to celebrate his victories.
Said fuck all about Katie Taylor winning, didn't I?
Listen, we got a message last week from... and it started a debate on social media from a guy who said, listen, lads, you know, it's getting a bit tiresome dogging on boxing every 2 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
And the big conversation went on and people went, listen, yeah, okay, it is a bit tiresome, but at the end of the day, I'd rather people talk about the shitty end of boxing. And, of course, when you speak about the good stuff about boxing, then it becomes a little bit more prominent, doesn't it? I'm going to start by dogging it
a bit.
Yeah, I'm going to France, mate. That's where I'm going first and foremost. And then we'll have a little bit of a celebration of some fantastic action. Because Charlo and Castaño should just fight every 6 months. That's what they should do. Don't let anybody fight anybody else. Just let them two fucking knock shit out of each other every 6 months. Amazing stuff. Yeah. Anyway, we'll get to that and we'll have a good celebration about that fight in a minute. We're starting with Martin Bacoli versus Tony Yoker. And obviously, this is a fight that has been rumoured to take place for such a fucking long period of time. And it's here now. It's here. And I looked at the odds on Friday, because I thought that you might put a little bit of a thing on that. So I looked at the odds on Friday, and Tony Yoker were favourite. And fair enough, Olympic pedigree and what have you. Thought, all right, sound, I might have a little bit of a bang on Martin Bacoli here. But I, for some reason, I didn't do it. I so wish that I did, because he absolutely battered the shit out of Tony Yoker. And when I say battered him, if you've not seen this fight, because it was a bit of a fucking nightmare to try and get your hands on it, he won every fucking minute. of every round. Of every round. 10-round fight, he batters the living daylights out of him. Puts him down in the first, puts him down in the fifth, and absolutely smokes the dude. Fantastic away-from-home victory for Martin Bukola. Congratulations to him. Congratulations to his team. That is a stellar, stellar win against someone with Olympic pedigree. Great victory.
Said he was
going to
do it.
Him.
He's been saying he's going to do it since the fight was announced.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So congratulations to him. Now, that kind of is the end of the analytics of the fight, because that's what happened. It's not like it's contentious or anything like that. Bukola went over there, battered him for 10
dropped
rounds.
Dropped him a couple of times.
Dropped him in the first, dropped him in the fifth. End of chat, right? He wins, and if and with those two drop, two knockdowns, you would score that fight 100 to 88. That's what you would score it, because I can't make any argument at any point that Tony Yoka wins a round, right? Anyway, that's not what we're talking about here today, ladies and gentlemen. We are talking about the standard of French officiating. That's right. Because the three wise men that were inside. Now, we've had a go at the British Boxing Board of Control, who, by the way, are closed today. Might talk about that later on. British Boxing Board of Control, obviously, we've had a go at them at the end of Jack Catterall and Josh Taylor. We've spoken about them on many, many occasions when they're using fucking glasses of water in order to be able to score fights and what have you. And we have come to the conclusion that obviously major reform is needed within the British Boxing Board of Control. Major reform is needed worldwide when it comes to the scoring of fights. We need unified rules. We need a tablet there that says, there you go, that's how you score a fight. Let's get to it. I have absolutely no idea what these three dudes were watching in France between Bukola and Yoka. I have no idea what they were watching. Now, the scorecards, for those that haven't seen it, you've got a 92-96 in favour of Martin Bukola. You've got a 94-94, and then you've got a 95-93 in favour of Martin Bukola. Now, I'm just going to explain that, because it looks like a majority decision and the right man won. This is the problem, because the right man won. The right man's walked away with his hand raised on a majority decision. It wasn't a majority decision. It should have been a unanimous decision, and it should have been a fucking shutout is what it should have been. So just to paint the picture of that 92-96... The 92-96 is a 6-4 card in favour of Martin Bukola. So therefore, they've given four rounds to Tony Yoka. Obviously, the two knockdowns loses him 2 points. It would have been 96-94. The draw is actually a 6-4 in favour of fucking Tony Yoka. 6-4 in favour of the dude. But because he's been on his ass twice, he's ended up losing 2 points and the fight's ended up becoming a draw. The other one, 95-93, is a draw. The dude has scored it 5 apiece, but because of the two knockdowns, he's given it. So without the knockdowns, it's a fucking draw. What were these three dudes watching, man? It was absolutely categorically bullshit. Every single one of the cards, not even one card, all of them are absolute bullshit. There's no way that you can make an argument that Tony Yoka wins four rounds. He didn't win four rounds. If you're the biggest Tony Yoka fan, and you're there with your Tony Yoka glasses on, you might squeeze two rounds out, man. You might out for him.
Because I'd seen the controversy about the scoring afterwards. I'd seen that, on Sunday morning on the train coming back, and then obviously I watched the fight last night. So I'm trying to give rounds to Tony Yoka to get anywhere near it, and I managed to give him, I think it was 7 and 8, I managed to give him. But, you know, I'm now, just because he did marginally better than those two rounds than previous rounds. So, potentially you give him two rounds. But with the knockdowns, then 2 rounds he wins get eliminated anyway. It wasn't even close. And it's kind of shocking that, you know, that Bertrand Chanau or whatever the judge's name was that scored it a draw.
Six to four
in favour of Yoka. He's got an experience as well, man. He's judged in the UK. He was one of the judges for Lewis Ritson and Robbie Davis Jr.
I thought you were going to say Ritson and Vasquez then. Well, there's a fucking card in itself.
Yeah, exactly. He was one of the judges for Ritson and Robbie Davis Jr. And I don't remember his card being way off. I think it was very similar to everybody else's card. So this is, you know, clearly a homer. You know, let's not forget Tony Yoka.
basically the French version of fucking Anthony Joshua. He's the Olympic gold medalist. The sun shines out of the crack of his arse. And obviously they give him every opportunity and every favour they possibly could. But it wasn't close. It wasn't even nearly close. There's no need for the rematch unless you want to pay Martin Bacoli a fucking truck full of money. Because it was a completely one-sided fight. Tony Yoka may look the part, but he certainly isn't the part. Because let's be honest, Bacoli ain't no fucking, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard Muhammad Ali's second coming. He is what he is. He's a brute. He's big. He's strong. He plants his feet and he just throws big hooks. But Tony Yoka just completely got bamboozled by him. Mad. And I tell you what, I know Yoka got a terrible decision against Joe Joyce anyway. It should never have been. Joe Joyce won that fight. But that's not even a fight now. It's not. The potential for that to be a rematch, obviously Yoka's been beat, so he's fucked. But Joe Joyce would absolutely kill Tony Yoka in fucking three rounds. Like, this guy is not, he's not a world-class heavyweight. And that's, again, I don't want to knock Martin Bacoli on his big night, because I like Martin Bacoli, man. Mm. And hopefully he gets big fights on the back of this Martin Bacoli, gets some good opportunities, but Tony Yoka, man, there's been a lot of talk about him since the Olympics and now his career's just meandered along. He just doesn't look like he's a fighter that's taken his career seriously, because the Bacoli fight's been there for so long, you'd think he'd been prepared, but Bacoli just battered him, you're right. I was really disappointed with Yoka, really disappointed.
As cards go... just to rubber stamp what I'm saying here regarding this state of this judging, because
that could be the worst. That draw could be the worst card this year.
It's for me. Those cards are up there. We had Adelaide Bird's 118-110 against which Canelo got against Triple G, because that just didn't happen in that particular fight either.
Yeah,
I can't, like you said, 94-94. So therefore 6-4 in favor of Tony Yoka, and the two knockdowns bring it back down to a draw. It's one of the worst. It is one of the worst cards that you're ever likely to see. And don't get me wrong, there's been some bad ones. I just mentioned Ritson and Vasquez there a couple of minutes ago, didn't we? And we've spoken about the Adelaide Bird card. The cards that got put in for Taylor Catterall, listen, they're wrong. They're bad, right? This is worse. Yeah. This is because at least Josh within the rounds with Jack Catterall is competitive within the rounds. There's moments within the 3 minutes where Josh is on top. But the majority of the 3 minutes were won by Jack Catterall. That's why, in my opinion, he takes that fight 8-4. All right?
Yeah.
But this was just like, the kid's battered. Fucking 6-0 up, man. What the fuck is going on here? Jeez. I can't believe it, mate. I could not believe the score.
6-0
up in
with two knockdowns as well.
We're laughing, yeah. Right? But something needs to be done. Because, like you said, this is a lad. He's gone away from home. It's an away from home fight. He's fighting an Olympic medalist. So you're up there and you're thinking to yourself, this is a major opportunity for me to really make a name for myself, establish myself, and that's going to propel me on to
change my life
to big fights. The dude's had to put him on his ass twice to sneak it, and he's battered him in every round. Something's got to be done. Something has to be done. Nothing will get done, though. Nobody gives a fuck, because the right guy won. What you're moaning about, the right guy won. It's bullshit, man.
This time.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about some good stuff.
You want to talk about some good stuff? Listen, I know that Jermell Charlo's going to up sticks and he's going to have a go at 160, because his brother's already come out and said, go on then, I'll go up to 168 and give my brother an opportunity to fight at 160 after he's become the undisputed champion at 154. I'm a little bit gutted, if I'm really honest, for Castano, because I think Castano won the first fight. I think he got stiffed in the first fight. He's super competitive in this fight. He does win rounds. But what I'm
I had one, at level after six, I had at level.
One thing I will say though, well done, Jermell Charlo, because what is significantly different in this fight compared to the first occasion and previous Jermell Charlo fights, because he's never really needed to do it. He's never really come up against anybody like Brian Castano with that amount of volume. He tried to live with him. He upped his volume. He threw more shots. Rather than going for those single one-hitter quitters, which, listen, they fucking pay off. He's fucking unbelievable at it. But he upped the volume. And therefore, it was the work to the body. It was the multiple amounts of shots that he was throwing that wore Castano down. And then he could land that fucking bomb in that 10th round to get the finish. So you've got to take your hat off to Charlo, his trainer, who's down for Trainer of the Year, who also looks after Errol Spence. It was a fantastic, fantastic performance from Jermell Charlo, and congratulations to him, man. Undisputed champion of the world. But I tell you what, if they were to make a third fight between them two dudes, I wouldn't fucking mourn. I wouldn't mourn at all, because that was an absolute belter.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought he was sensational, Charlo. He did everything that he didn't do in the first fight. You know, he spoke openly last week, during the media week. Something I picked up on, and he was like, listen, I thought I was the superstar. It went to my head. I never trained properly. I never focused on Castano. Never give him the respect he deserves as a world champion. Thought I was just going to blow him away, as I've been doomed to everybody. That won't happen this time. And as soon as that come out of his mouth midweek, I was like, that's what I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear a fighter like Jermell Charlo take responsibility for not turning up in the first fight. Take responsibility and go, I fucked that. I got it. What he's basically saying is, I fucked up first fight. I never gave him the respect he deserved. I'm going to fucking own this second fight. I'm going to own my performance. And I think he proved that in the fight as well. His mentality was completely different. He had a jab. His jab was working great on Saturday night. And as you say, the key for me, instead of throwing ones and twos, he was throwing threes and fours. Exactly what Castano was doing in the first fight. Exactly what Castano was doing in this fight. The difference is you could see, as I say, I had it close. I had it three rounds apiece, literally like Charlo Castano.
Yeah,
for the first six rounds, I was like, this is a fucking brilliant fight. They're so well matched up. But as soon as we got into round 7, 8, 9, as soon as it went to the second half of the fight, I just thought Charlo then just started to have a little bit too much sting on his punches for Castano. Every time he would land, Castano's head was snapping back, and it was the third and fourth punch of combinations that were making that head pounce back. That was the difference. Charlo went away, changed his game plan. I'm doing this differently. That's the problem, you see. Sometimes when you get away with one, Castano goes away, watches the first fight and goes, rinse and repeat, motherfucker. Yeah. I'm going to be just as game, just as fit. I'm more confident now because I took your power shots. I'm going to win the second fight. I've got the game plan to do it. Whereas Charlo, Team Charlo went away and went, right, we fucked that first fight. This is how we win the second fight, because we give everything. We completely change what we're doing. You're not just going to blow them away. It is going to be a tough fight. And that's how I come on strong. And then, you know, even on my prediction show on Friday, on the Knicks Big Show, I was like, once we get like 10, 11, 12, that's when Charlo, if he has done the work, becomes so much more dangerous, because he carries his power late. Yeah. Carries it late. And that first knockdown in the 10th, you were calling it a check left hook. I thought it was the body shot that done the damage. He throws a body shot, and Castano kind of falls into him, and then he throws a little choppy left hook, I think it was, up close. And then Castano goes down, and they were like, oh, it's a weird shot there. And I thought, no, what? For me, I thought it was the body shot. Castano sucked it up, as you often see with body shots. It takes a few seconds, you know, but basically a body shot, you never had one. It's like getting a fucking Casey blasted into your bollocks. You take it, and then you have that split second where you go, oh, actually, I'm okay.
No, I'm not.
And then your brain goes, no, you can't breathe. And that's when you fucking have to go down. That's what happened. Then he gets back to his feet, wobbly everywhere. As soon as Charlo smells blood, he's a predator, man. Look at his fucking knockout records, his highlights, him and their kid. The highlight knockouts they've got are because they're sharks. And when there's blood in the water, they go for the kill. And that's exactly what Charlo did. And what did he do to finish him? He didn't run out and throw one big bomb. He poured forward and just went, bah, 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 and just let his hands go. Four or five shots. Castano's head gets chopped back. The referee jumps in. Great performance. That's how good Charlo is. That's how good Jermell Charlo is. The two of them, absolutely outstanding. And he's, you know, the seventh undisputed champion of the year. Four belt era, man. That is not to be taken lightly. He's joining an elite list of champions there. And credit to boxing, man. We get to say this more and more often these days, which is brilliant.
Mm. And he's done it in a division as well, which was a little bit like a hot potato over the last 2 to 3 years, really, wasn't it? You know what I mean? You had Harrison in there, you had Hurd in there. Obviously, Castano's come through. There was loads that
was in there.
They were all beating each other. They were all beating each other at one point. And obviously, Jermell was on the... I mean, some people still think that he was on the wrong end of something with Tony Harrison. I still think that Tony Harrison beat him that particular night, but so others might say that it should have gone the other way.
He avenged it anyway, didn't he, 12 months later when he knocked Harrison out. So,
but what my point is that we're not just talking about a weak division. Some people might say it is a weak division. I think it was super competitive for at least 2 to 3 years. He's just risen. He's got better. He's as you've just seen and as you've just spoken about there, the performance at the weekend showed real maturity. The way that he dealt with himself throughout the course of the week, real maturity. Yes, you can watch the Jermell Charlo interviews. He's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder. I mean, he's even been giving Coppinger a little bit in the press conference afterwards. You know what I mean? He's been giving everybody all sorts of shit because that's just his nature. That's just the way he is. But judging for what he does in the ring, that's a really mature performance, that.
Yeah.
To accept, first fight, took this kid lightly. Can't do that. We're at the elite level now. This is the big boys. These are unifying divisions. These are the top, top champs.
Yeah.
And his performance was absolutely fantastic. Like, rightfully said.
So fair play to him.
Undisputed champion of the world. And that, do you know something? 154 becomes so interesting. 140, 147 and 154... become really interesting, mate, over the next 12 months because you've got 140...
One fight away, aren't we, from undisputed at welterweight? So that means we'd have undisputed in three weight divisions.
That's what I mean. So you've got those three there. There's going to be one single, one song. Well, there is in two of those divisions at the moment. Obviously, we know, I think Josh Taylor has just given up his WBA version of his belt because he didn't want to... And we're hearing that he's going up anyway, right? So those belts are going to get scattered at 140. 147, they can make Spence and Crawford. I don't think the winner's staying. They win, and then it's like, go on then, we'll have a little bit of a go further up. Crawford's already said that even though he's small, and Spence is fucking massive. So he's going to go and have a go at 154, isn't he? And then you've got this now where Charlo is the king at 154. Those belts are going to get scattered. Now, what I've just said about this division being super competitive and it could be the who's who and everybody's beating everybody, it's kind of still the case at 154. You look at it, Charlo rose above everybody else, and that's why he's the king right now. Of course, you would probably put Brian Castano as one of the main dogs, but he's not going to get a shot at the undisputed crown. Yeah, he might get a shot. I think he was the WBO, so the WBO will rank him highly, won't they? So they might stick him back in that mix. You look around at 154, there's actually an opportunity for a few dudes coming through. I mean, listen, I know that I've mentioned Beefy's name a couple of times. After his last performance, he's in the rankings. He's on the cusp of something. Obviously, Kell's just retired, hasn't he? You never know. It might be shortest retirement ever if Kel fancies getting back in with something. But what I'm saying is that there's going to be opportunities there in all those divisions, 140 right through to 154 over the next 12 months.
Yeah, and as you say, it's a good mix. My only fear is that you've got three consecutive, well, you've got two undisputed champions either side of the welterweight division, and we all pray that we're going to get undisputed before the end of the year in the welterweight division. It's a shame that they're stripping Josh already, but I think Josh is obviously making it clear he's coming up to welterweight. What I want to see is somewhere in this permutation, whether that's Crawford beating Spence, Crawford sticking round at welter to take on Josh Taylor to make Top Rank and shed load of money. Undisputed versus undisputed is what I'm trying to get to.
All right.
You know, I know Josh has already started giving up them belts, but the title of undisputed champion taking on undisputed champion is really real. And obviously, if Spence were to beat Crawford, then Spence potentially moving up to take on Charlo, undisputed welter versus undisputed light middle. Do you know what I mean? So you're gonna have three champions basically lined up as undisputed. We could get undisputed versus undisputed, undisputed.
Do not
unbelievable.
Do not rule out because. Listen, I've kind of just omitted 135 there as well. We've got Kambosos and Haney coming up soon. So
of course.
So that's all going to be unified. And Haney's a big dude. So if he can come through a Kambosos, I'm not saying he will because Kambosos is fucking legit. He's proven that. But if he does, expect him to go up to 140 and then fucking lightweight gets blown wide open. It's mad. Mm. We're in a really good place from 135 right through to 154. Really good places, man.
Some mega fights out there, isn't there? Absolutely mega.
I tell you who's going to be happy about that. Every fucking sanctioning body. Guess how much they made at the weekend, mate?
Millions.
12% of both purses. 12% of both purses. Now, the official purses, I think, were $1.5 million. So $1 million for Charlo, $500,000 for Castano. So what you're looking at there? You're looking at 120 grand off Charlo for everybody. That's all right, isn't it? And then what, 60-odd off Castano. So they've got themselves a nice bit of tickle there, aren't they? I know that the both of those guys will get a little bit more, very similar to what we get with UFC purses. You've got your official purse, and you've got your extra little bunt on the side with pay-per-view points and all that type of carry-on. But
listen, still,
man, 12% for just saying, you can fight. Fucking mad, isn't it?
And you have to pay them up front, you know, to apply for the license to defend the belt as well. They're not daft. No wonder they make new belts for every fight.
Undercard of Jermell Charlo's fantastic undisputed performance. We saw Jerron Ennis, a guy that we're extremely high on. This is the guy at welter. Once we've had that undisputed fight, he's now become the IBF mandatory. So hopefully we get Spence, Crawford. We imagine that the winner of that would clear off. And then you get the next generation coming through, the likes of the Virgil Ortizes. But this guy, Jerron Ennis, once again doing his thing in what was a bit of a mismatch, if I'm honest. And the more I think about Jerron Ennis right now, We've been hiring him for ages. We've been telling you about him for ages. The world knows about Jerron Ennis. And people can make excuses for certain things. I get it. Because last week we were talking about Kell Brook not having a world championship fight until his 33rd professional fight. This dude has had 29 professional fights. 29. He's undefeated through 29. He's knocked out 27 dudes. As you're listening to this now, tell me one memorable Jerron Ennis fight. Tell me one guy that Jerron Ennis has fought that you're going to go, oh yeah, I remember that one. Yeah. He hasn't had that moment yet, even though he's fucking Mustard.
Is that highlight reel knockouts? Is that
Yeah. Of course. But I'm talking about actual fights where you've gone, fucking hell, Jerron Ennis is in a fight this weekend. When have you felt that? You haven't?
No.
Ortiz has. Even Conor Benn, who we thought maybe the ceiling was British title. Because there's been those moments where we've gone, oh, fucking hell, this is a bit of a step up for him. You've never had that with Jerron Ennis. You've never had that moment where you've gone, fucking hell, right, we're going to find out if he's the real deal this weekend. Yeah. Even Sergei Lipinets. You knew that Jerron Ennis was going to go through him just because of where Lipinets was at.
Yeah, that was the biggest name on his ledger so far, Lipinets, absolutely. And he was outstanding in that, but he pissed it and then knocked him out.
Yeah.
And listen, maybe that's just because Jerron Ennis is so good, though. This is why a lot of people believe Jerron Ennis is the best welterweight out there, not called Terence Crawford or Errol Spence. And a lot of people maintain that he's better than both of those guys once he gets the opportunity. He is 24. Let's not get away from the fact that even though he has had a lot of fights, he's 24 years of age. He's probably just maturing into his adult body now, really starting to get that man strength, and yet he's icing fellas in two rounds. You're right, Clayton was a mismatch. We said on last week's show, it's a mismatch. Everyone other than the champions at the top of this division is pretty much a mismatch for Boots Ennis. So,
what would you like to see next then for him?
Because he's not a fight.
Yeah, but we're going to see the undisputed fight, right? So he can't just sit there and wait because he's the IBF mandatory now. Something like a Thurman. Former champ?
Absolutely, of course.
Yeah, that's the one.
100%. 100%. You're looking at, you've got Crawford and you've got Spence at the top of the tree, haven't you? Then you've got your Thurmans, then you've got your Ugas, then you've got, you know, Avanesian. They're your older statesmen, been there, done it, fucking dangerous motherfuckers. And then you've got your Conor Benns, your Boots Ennis and your Ortiz Jr., your young guys on the scene coming through. It's got to be a Thurman, or a Mikey Garcia, or a fucking Ugas. It's got to be one of those guys next. I think Avanesian is the boogeyman for all these young guys. Mm. Avanesian, for me, is the statement. But Avanesian is high risk. Where the Thurman, it's about timing. Has he just gone? You know, is Mikey Garcia completely washed? Is it worth the gamble to get that name? That's what Ortiz, Boots Ennis, and Conor Benn should all be juggling with right now. Because they're the names that take one of those guys out, then you're front and centre ready for Crawford, Spence, someone to stick around, or the fragmentation of all the belts. The problem with Boots compared to those two, you're right, I haven't seen him have a gut check. I haven't seen him fucking lose a round, get hit, struggle, face adversity. And if from a Boots Ennis fan point of view, you could argue it's because he's so good.
Mm-hmm.
But is he having those fights in the gym? Maybe. I can't see. Is he getting dropped in the gym? Is he getting worked in the gym? Has he had guts checks in the gym? I don't know. It reminds me a little bit of the Daniel Dubois situation. When Daniel Dubois was fighting Joe Joyce, and we were like, Dubois flying, but he's going to get a gut check in this fight. Will he come through it? And ultimately, he didn't come through it. Because it's not a situation he was comfortable in. He was used to being in. Is that happening in the gym with Boots? We're going to find out. We're going to find out big time. A good way to test the water is by going in with a Mikey Garcia, going in with a Avanesian, going in with a Thurman or a Nougas. Because if you can't beat any of those four guys, then you ain't beating Crawford or Spence anyway. But again, you're right. It's kind of like timing, isn't it? If you're Eddie, if you're a PBC with these guys, you're waiting for the perfect time. Crawford Spence is done now. The winner's gone, right? Fuck all the belts off. I'm going up after Charlo. Then you move. Right, okay. Vacant title fight. Conor Benn. Let's get fucking... Where are we? Let's look down to number 30 in the rankings, shall we?
Listen.
Do you know what I mean?
That's not what we do here, Nicholas. You're talking with your business head on now. You're talking
that's
sense.
Literal. Right. I want to see the best.
That's it. That's it. For me, listen, Mikey Garcia, I could always make an argument that Mikey Garcia is not a welterweight. He was a king at 140 downwards, right?
Of course.
Thurman's the guy. Thurman looked good for large percentages of his comeback fight, didn't he? Looked good for large percentages of that. Former world champion, legit dude. At one point, you could have made an argument that Thurman was the best in the world at 147. Let's go, man. Keith Thurman's the fight. Pay Keith Thurman what he wants, put him in with Boots Ennis, and let's see what Boots Ennis is all about, man. That's the fight to make. That's a belter. Yep. What a belting
sign
fight.
Sign me up.
Listen, I've got a confession to make. I didn't watch the Cruiserweight box tournament. I didn't watch it. What are your highlights? Have you caught much of it or not?
The low life for me was betting 50 quid on Jay Farrell to win and him losing in the opening round.
Okay, nice.
So that was that. All was right. A bit of a low
you
light.
Are actually highlighting some of your losses at the bookies. Well done, mate. That's good for you.
Yeah. There was a rumbling in Liverpool that he was flying in the gym and everyone was like, "Oh, let's get on it." So I threw a little 50 quid on Jay Farrell to come through and win the whole thing. But unfortunately, he got drawn with Ellis Zotto in the opening round. And as we know, Mr. Zotto went on and won the whole fucking thing. So congratulations to him. Looked good, man. I dipped in and out of it, but I didn't watch the whole thing. But it looked like a good little tournament. I like it. I'm a fan of these prize fighter style competitions, and hopefully, it provides a platform that young Mr. Zorro can build on. Certainly a fucking headline writer's dream, isn't he? So,
yeah. Listen, don't worry. I've not forgot about Gilberto Ramirez at the weekend. I'll get to him in a minute. I want to talk quickly on Friday night because we've kind of jumped over a few things, haven't we? Friday night.
Yeah, what a cracking fight that was.
We mentioned Denzel Bentley taking on Linus Sudofia. What a good fight. See what I mean?
Mega.
You put a good title on the line. British, there you go, lads. That's, a bit of history behind the belt. This means a little bit. It's not a fucking secondary title. It's not an intercontinental. It's not a fucking Mayen or whatever they're bloody coming up with these days. There you go. There's a Lonsdale belt. Bosh. Put the Lonsdale belt on the line. Evenly matched two lads. They see the worth in it. They've gone for it. A little bit of fucking animosity between them. Just a tiny bit, not too much. I thought there was a bit of respect in there, but a little bit of needle in there as well. Fucking sweet, man. What a good fight. At certain points, it could have gone either way. I agree with the judges. I think Denzel did enough, but it was fucking... It was a good knock, mate. Really good knock.
Yeah, I completely agree. I thought Denzel just edged it by a round or two, but I've got no issue with the three British judges who've come in there. Three of them have been in the firing line before. Fucking even Voldemort was in there, but Voldemort went with Udofia. But listen, it was a great fight. Really good matchup. Both of them, well, Udofia obviously can absolutely come again. Nice for Denzel to get a big moment like that on a good card. Nice to see boxing back on Channel 5 as well. And I thought Harlem Eubank looked good as well. Sean Dodd's no joke, mate. Man. He's an orthodox masher. I know he's come out of retirement to fight and all that. So you can kind of go, where is his head at and all that kind of stuff. But Masher's a really difficult boxer to box. His style is fucking... You don't appreciate his style. So many people who I know have boxed Masher over the years and sparred him say the same thing. You don't value how good he is until you get in the ring with him. So to Harlem Eubank to deal with him and to knock him out in the way that he did in the second round, mate, that's genuine props, like kudos. People in boxing know that's no joke of a win for him, man. And props to Harlem on that one, definitely.
Do you know something regarding Harlem? I think when you carry a name Eubank, obviously there's going to be expectations. Same for Conor Benn. You carry a name of a legend around with you. There's always going to be attention. And then especially with Chris Jr., doing what he's doing, you kind of look at Chris and you think, all right. Fans have done this, I think, with Harlem Eubank. You throw everybody into the same boat, don't you? That they all act the same way and they're going to be the same. Haaland's not like that at all. I think he's come up the hard way. He's a grafter. And as you saw at the weekend, kid's got fucking talent, man. He's got some good talent there. And who knows where this is going to go. Like you've just said there, he's took care of a difficult, awkward... someone who I expect him to be, don't get me wrong, but awkward, tricky and difficult. He's come through it. He's done it in a good fashion. He talks very well. He's in the gym constantly working. He's working with some good people. Fucking fair play to him, man. Fair play to Harlem Eubank doing his thing. I didn't see Josh Kelly, by the way. Was he on the TV? Oh, what happened with that?
So was Josh Kelly...
Was he on the telly?
No. Josh Kelly came in 3.5 pound overweight. And his opponent said, I'm not fighting you then. And then Josh Kelly and Callie Sauerland took to the media that was there, the boxing media that were at the event, and basically slagged off the opponent. Said they offered him 3 times the amount they originally offered him to continue to fight, but he's a coward, he's a bottle job, he doesn't want to fight. And I was like, you fucking come in way overweight.
Yeah,
how unprofessional do you want to be? You're basically getting a kid to come in to face Josh Kelly, resurgence, 15 months on after that Essien, new promoter, new TV channel. Boom, this is the guy. Josh Kelly on his day, fucking a little magician. You gask an opponent, you bring an opponent in to fight him. That opponent turns up, that opponent makes the weight that you told him to make.
Contract. And Josh comes in. Part of the deal, man.
Yeah. Part of the deal. And Josh comes in. No, he hasn't missed weight. He's failed to make weight. A couple of pound over. It's not just like fuck, sorry, mate, it's that. And then to go, well, we've offered you more money.
And?
What the fuck, man? We're giving you more money. No. I am 100% with the opponents on this one. The contract says make a certain weight. You make weight. Yeah. If you don't make weight, Josh Kelly, guess what? Your opponent is well within his rights to go, well, I ain't fighting you. I'm already at a massive disadvantage. You're fucking Josh Kelly. I'm a Latvian bin man. And I've turned up and I've made weight. Thank you. I've made weight. You haven't. Pay me. I don't care. Pay me. So I've got no sympathy with Josh Kelly whatsoever. I was devastated because I was really looking forward to seeing Josh come back, put the whole episode about Evan Essien behind him, come back resurgent. And instead, I picks up my phone Friday afternoon, and I sees him and Callie Sauerland saying the opponent's a bottle job for not taking the weight. We were going to give him more money. And I just thought, fucking hell, mate. What are we doing here? Really disappointing.
Listen, obviously I was out and about on the lash, so I missed that on Friday afternoon. What was the reaction from fans like online with that? Because what I find is that people's attitudes differ right across the spectrum on this. Obviously, me and you...
Yeah.
We're on the same page. You sign a contract. This is what weight I'm going to make. That is part one of the deal. If you fail to do part one of the deal, you fucked it, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly.
So what was the reaction like online? Were people like going, oh, yeah, I'm with you, Josh, or were they like what we're doing on the side of the opponent?
From what I've seen, it seemed mostly the side of the opponents. I'm just checking the weight now. So this Callie Sauerland said he'd come in 1.2 kilograms over, and all it was 1.2 kilograms, and the opponent didn't want it. 1.2 kilograms is 2.65 pounds.
Okay, so nearly 3 pounds.
So,
£2.5. 2.5 pounds.
Yeah, 2.5 pounds. He's come in 2.5 pounds overweight. Bear in mind that it's fucking Josh Kelly, man. The kid can fight. I just don't understand the rhetoric and the way a lot of the boxing press reported it as well. Going, oh, I can't believe it. Yeah, he's a bottle job, him. And there wasn't really a strong stance. But if you went on social media and looked at a lot of the feeds from, you know, Boxing Social and all these other sites that had reported bottle job, a lot of the fans' opinions were the same as mine, where they were like, nah, fuck that.
Good.
What the fuck? Bottle job. How can you call him a bottle job? You've been unprofessional. You've not made weight. Yeah. There was no, from what I could see, and I apologise if Josh has put this out there, I didn't see an apology from Josh. There should have been. Apologise to everyone that's bought a ticket. Yeah. I apologise to my new promoter. I apologise to Channel 5. Apologise for everybody. This is why I failed to make weight because of X, Y, Z. I would love my opponent to take the fight. I understand if he doesn't. I would love him to. And I can only apologise to him instead. That didn't happen. Lord, I didn't see that. All I seen was my opponent's a bottle job. He doesn't want it.
It's only £3 or it's only £2.50. Nah, man, that attitude sucks. Yeah. That is a shitty attitude to take. You fucked up. You own you fucking up. Take some responsibility. That's my take on it.
Weight division's for a reason, man. The opponent's in the right, as far as I'm concerned. I hope he got weighed in. I hope he got paid.
Because like should have done weight.
If he weighed in and made weight, then he should get paid.
Yeah, exactly.
we speak about light heavyweights all the time, don't we, on here? We've obviously got a cracker between two British light heavyweights this weekend, which we're going to preview for you in a minute. Dead excited about that fight, because it's just going to be fucking brilliant. And then obviously on a worldwide scale, we're extremely excited about what we've just seen from Bivol doing his thing against Canelo. Can that set up now a fight with Artur Beterbiev or Joe Smith Jr. ever comes through that? Mm-hmm. Listen, Zerdo Ramirez, yeah, he's often the forgotten dude when we're chatting about this shit, isn't he? He's the dude that we kind of like don't mention too much. He's 44 and all the dude. And all right, there's some decent names on there. There's some former, you know, men dudes on there and what have you. He took out Dominic Brazil at the weekend in good fashion. Looked really, really good. Stick him in that mix, man. But he's just a fucking big old brute, that dude, that can do a bit as well. Really impressed with Zerdo Ramirez at the weekend, mate. And we need to talk about him a little bit more.
Yeah, that's what he does, though. He's a fucking knockout machine. He's so big, so strong. And yet he's only 30 as well. Like, you know, he's still got his prime years ahead of him. He's a southpaw, so he does everything fucking backwards anyway, which is a problem from day one. Mate, I really like him. I think he's got so much ability. And he's like the unheralded. He could be like the saviour of Mexican kind of face, if
big
you
lads.
Like. You know,
I
kind of don't want... I want Canelo to just go, you know what? Bit off a little bit more than I could chew. I'm going back for Golovkin. I'm going back for Charlo. The bigger fights, bigger names anyway.
Or even, if we're talking Mexicans, Benavidez. Go back down there and have a super fight with Benavidez.
And I just think that would open the door for Gilberto Ramirez to go, right, well, I'm fucking here now. And I'm going to get a bit of national pride back for Mexico. Because the kid's legit. Absolutely legit, man. I think he's a little bit unorthodox. I think he's a little bit wild. But fuck me, he's got TNT in those hands, man.
44-0. Going after Floyd's records, isn't he? That's what he's doing. He's going up for a bit of Marciano. I think that's me done with all the boxing at the weekend. Obviously, we've got to talk about Amir and we'll do a bit of previewing. But I think that's all the fights that I've seen this weekend. Is there anything else that we've missed that has stood out for you?
I think review-wise, mate, that's it. That's it, review-wise. There's a shitload of preview, though. I've got about 19 cards here.
Severe.
Talk about. But before we do, let's celebrate the king.
Let's celebrate King Khan, right? Because everybody's got an opinion on Amir Khan. Got a feel for Kell Brook. He couldn't let Kell Brook just retire, could he? And have a good couple of weeks where everybody's praising Kell Brook. Well done, Kell. Fantastic. You're the man, Kell. Right off into the sunset, Kell. Nah. Kell retires. Amir goes, do you know something? Just one last dig before we go. I'll fucking piss on his chips. I'll retire as well. Let's see what happens here. So he's retired as well this week, Amir Khan, admitting that he's handing up the gloves. And well, listen, for me, it's Hall of Fame. There'll be people out there that come to me and say, you're talking absolutely bullshit. For me, Amir Khan is Hall of Fame. 17 years of age, goes to the Olympics, does what he does, and kind of changes the face of British boxing. Okay, Audley came slightly before him, but those medals that he achieved, absolutely sensational, and has been the catalyst for the Anthony Joshuas, the Joshua Boatsies, all those types of kids that have come through since. Correct. It came from King Khan at 17 years of age. He then steps into the pro game, becomes world champion at 22 years of age and unifies the 140-pound division. Check it out, ladies and gentlemen. He becomes champ by beating Kitonic. He's beaten Malinaji, Maidana, Judah, Colazzo, Alexander, Algieri, all world champions. Amir Khan beat them all. You see that I just omitted Marco Antonio Barrera there because I know that people come at me saying it was a wash version of Barrera. Okay, I agree with you. It was a past his sell-by-date version of Barrera, but he still beat him. Yes, he made some daft decisions by going up in weights to take on the likes of Canelo at 160. This is a kid that wasn't even a welterweight. He was a 140-pound fighter that got greedy because the bigger fights were up there. That's where the money was at. He shouldn't have been fighting at middleweight. That's 100% sure. Like I said, it's a bit of a travesty for me that we finish this Amir Khan story without him getting the dance with Mayweather or without him getting the dance with Pacquiao. People will say, well, he'd have got beat anyway. Yeah, maybe he would have done. Maybe he would have done. But do not take for granted what this kid had. He had a super amount of skills. Super amount of skills. He had bollocks the size of fucking King Kong. And he gave us entertainment every single time he stepped through the ropes. Yeah, okay. Maybe he peaked pre-27 years of age. Maybe that's what did happen. But for fucking at least 10 years in there, Amir Khan was absolute... In fact, he was box office right up until the end. Right up until the end, he was box office. But in the super, super fights, you still believed that even, you know, he could get clipped. But his performance against Maidana proved that he fucking had it. He absolutely could take a whack and dish out the whacks back. For me, his best performance is Devin Alexander. And after the back of that Devin Alexander performance, it's such a shame that Pacquiao or Mayweather didn't happen. Because we'd have all fucking gone to Vegas or MSG or wherever and had a fucking whale of a time with him, wouldn't we? And who knows, man? He might have done something fucking mad. But King Khan, thank you very much for the ride. One final thing, because I've just been speaking about him in the ring there. Outside of the ring, what a fucking bloke, man.
That's where I was going to go.
Always accommodating with his time.
Always.
Gave you stellar interviews. For people like me and you, mate, he is the benchmark. You want. Or if every fighter was like Amir Khan, this job would be fucking easy. So easy.
The exact comparison I was going to make when I covered football, there was a footballer at Liverpool that win, lose or draw would make himself available. And because of it, he became not only a media hero, but a cult hero with the fans as well. Lucas Leiva may not have been the greatest Brazilian you've ever seen, but tell you what, that motherfucker was adored by everybody in and around Anfield because of the way he was with his time. Never, ever turned down an interview. Always available. Give you what you wanted. The exact same reckoning is Amir Khan. Throughout his entire career, you know, I knew Amir from the amateur days, you know, fucking Amir when he had that rematch with Mario Kindelan, was supposed to happen in Liverpool, and then Frank got involved, and suddenly it was kind of like a Frank Warren amateur show. Fucking, it was dodgy as hell, it was court cases, you name it, it was funny. But that entire journey, from that moment, his entire pro career, I'm delighted to say I pretty much covered all of it, and he was a complete superstar from start to finish. You know, there wasn't a single time when he turned down an interview from not just for me, but for anyone around the shows as well. You know, I was there with the early days when Khan never did what, say, coming up this weekend, Buatsi. So many question marks still about Buatsi because the way his pro career has been managed, he's fucking fought nobody. He's fought one British title fight, then gave it up and he's gone international bollocks. What people forget about Khan, there's been the Barreras and the Judas and the Alexanders and the fucking, this golden list of, you know, superstar world champions. But prior to that, to get him ready for that, he did the Graham Earls, the Scott Lawtons, the fucking Michael Gomez's. They were big fight, big domestic fights.
Gomez, yeah.
Tough motherfucking Brits. British level guys who were like, I'll fucking batter Amir Khan, the little cheeky twat, blah, blah, blah. but he had those experiences in Nottingham Arena, Bolton Arena, the Manchester Arena, the Birmingham Arena. That's how Khan built his career. He built it the hard way. Yes, he was a level above those guys, but he never swerved the domestic route to get to where he wanted to be. He knew he wanted to be a world champion. Guess what? If you can't beat the best people in Britain, you ain't going to be a world champion. And he didn't skirt that. He didn't dodge. He didn't try and circumnavigate it. He went right through it. And then we were like, right, you've built up a big following now in the UK. All our fans are supporting you. Now we go to America. Now we go to world title level. That bit gets undervalued, I think, with Amir's career. He did it properly. And then when he got there, he had the fan base to take us with him. So, 100% from being ringside against Breeders Prescott. I think that was his first defeat, wasn't it, when Prescott chinned him.
Yeah, Manchester.
And that was the day I swam the River Mersey. I puked up in a bucket at the side of the stage, literally at that fight. From that fight to going through America with Khan, all over the country with him. An absolute pleasure to cover his career. Nothing short of a British Hall of Fame great. Never, ever, 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 ever in a bad fight. When can you ever remember watching Amir Khan and thinking you never got value for money? Maybe that was because of the jeopardy and the fact that he could be hurt, whether it was because he threw 1,000 fucking punches around in his heyday. It doesn't matter. There was never a show where I went to cover an Amir Khan fight when I didn't come away thinking I've fucking got my money's worth there.
Even the last one.
Always delivered. Always delivered.
Even the last one against Kel, where he's obviously a million miles. Yeah. He's a million miles from where he was. The hands were still there, but the feet just couldn't get him into the positions in order for him to deliver those hands. That's what happened in that fight. And Kel was absolutely on the money and did the business, right? But even in those moments, he still gave you the moments. Now, people might just think that he didn't play his part in that fight. Of course he did. He could have fucking just got down on one knee and gone, do you know something, fuck this. He refused to go down. And that's him. He refused to fucking go down and he kept walking into a fight when he knew full well, mate. He knew the day before in that fight. He knew the day before that he was fucked. But he went and walked into the fire. That says a lot about that dude, man. And that is Hall of Fame shit. I don't care.
Maybe that's something that about Amir that doesn't get appreciated enough, because people do like to, he's chinny though, isn't he? So Amir must have known he was potentially, he could get hurt. Amir knew that. Did that stop him taking big fights? Did that stop him getting in with fucking guys two weight divisions above him? Did that stop him to, you know what, I've got to get in there to get my shots off to then hopefully get out of there without getting tagged? It didn't stop him taking massive fights, massive risks. Why? Because he's a fighter, man. And he had a serious set of stones on him. That fucking, yeah, man, give me Terence Crawford. I'll take that fucking fight. Yeah, man, give me Kell Brook. Give me that. I'm not bothered. No, probably knowing full well that he wasn't the same fighter he once was. That, for me, does it. All the credit in the world. Absolutely incredible 40-fight career. Thank you, Amir. It's been a pure joy to be around you and to chronicle your career from both a fan and a journalist perspective, man. 100% Hall of Fame in my book. 100%.
Yeah. And to be fair, the names that I just read out there, Peterson should be on that fucking list as well, because he got skanked that night.
Not off.
Got skanked not only by the judges, but everything about that fight. Anyway, congratulations on a great career for him. Start of a new career for Ben Whitaker, because he's made his decision to go to the guys at Boxer, hasn't he? Teaming up with the kids at Sky. Some of the interviews last week were fucking hilarious, by the way.
Brilliant. I know. which was your favourite one?
My favourite one was they were doing a live stream. Ben Shalom was chatting to the camera. He says, he's not just come here for money. He's not just come here for platform. He's obviously here because he knows that we're going to cultivate him and we're going to turn him into this. Maybe true. 2 seconds later, Ben Whitaker walks up to the camera. He goes, why are you here? Well, Eddie offered me this. These guys offered me this. I've gone with a more door, man.
Superb. I've gone on it.
Fair enough, lad. At least you're fucking
superb.
Honest.
Yeah, exactly. Fucking mega.
But what a platform for him, because, Sky Sports is the platform still, especially when you want to attract casual audience. And
correct.
Listen, we've been on this show and we've talked about the guys and girls coming out of Team GB, and there's a lot of talent coming out this year. A lot of talent from the Tokyo Games. If we were to ask us to put money on people becoming world champion, we'd probably go Peter McGrail and Glau Yafai first and foremost. We'd probably go there first. There's a couple of others in there that you could have a little bit of a chat about.
Lots of experience.
And what have you.
Smaller weight divisions. You're right.
We'd probably go there. But when it comes to a complete package, he's going to be fun as fuck. He's going to give you the fucking one-liners on the microphone. He's going to knock some dudes out, and who knows where this shit's going to go. Ben Whitaker's the complete package, man. He's got it.
Yeah.
He's got the excitement factor.
Yeah, I can't wait. I literally cannot wait. Any idea what weight division he's going to do? Is he going to do super middle, light, heavy?
Float in between. He says he's float. Anybody can get it from 168 to 175, man. Anybody can get it. So that's the type of attitude we want to see. Have a float. Yeah, why not? You're young enough. Get it on.
I just want to see him busy. You know.
Yeah, unless, but I like his honesty, man. He's come for the coin. He's come for the coin, good lad.
I'm not going to knock him for that. Good on him.
Absolutely not.
It's a short career, man. You're in it for make as much money as you can, keep your faculties in check, and hopefully pick up a belt or two. There's nothing wrong with a bit of honesty. Fucking absolutely. What we want to do is just keep his opponents honest, though, as well. You know, I want to do the Amir Khan route with him. I want him to win. I'm sick of just seeing our fighters. And again, I don't want to feel like I'm booting Buatsi here when he's down, because Buatsi's going to silence me this weekend. We'll come on to that in a second. I'm back on board the Buatsi train after Saturday night. Wait and see. But there's a honesty about going Central area, British, Commonwealth, European, world title. If you're not the best in your area, you can never be British champ. If you're not British champ, you'll never be Commonwealth champ. If you're not Commonwealth champ, you'll never be European champ. If you can't be the European champ, then you'll never be a world champ. Do it properly. Put the work in. Get us on the journey. And when you get to the top, you'll look behind you and there'll be fucking thousands of us all with you. That's my only thing with Ben is, to both Bens, don't Fraser Clark debut this kid.
No. Don't pull a, don't pull a fucking guy out of the crowd. Come on.
Come on. This kid's the real deal, man. Give him the right fights, give him good matchmaking and watch us fly.
Well, look at, listen, look at what Galal's doing. 10 rounds straight away, let's go in, let's get some good level competition. I'm not saying do that, but what I'm saying is, in single figured fights, by the time you're getting to 6th and 7th and 8th fight of your professional career, I expect you to be in a 10 rounder, mate. You're a fucking Olympian.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Olympic medalist, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's that. This weekend, there's so much action. So many fights to get stuck into. Friday night, your call, Bethnal Green, if you've got a ticket for this. I think you're in for a little bit of a treat, actually, because I think the fight between Brad Foster and Baluta, we've seen Baluta live a couple of times, me and you.
Yeah.
He's a game little fucker. So, he is. Brad, that's a good little knock. I think Brad will come through. I'm a big fan of Brad Foster. I think he'll come through, but it's a tough, tough knock. And then you've got Andrew Cain on the card, man. That's all you need to know. Just turn up. Well, make sure you're in your seat nice and early because the fucker doesn't mess about. So again, he's taking on Luis Moreno. I don't know too much about Moreno, I'm going to be honest, but I know a lot about Andrew Cain, and the dude is absolutely flying, as is his gym. They're all high as fuck in there at the moment, putting in performance after performance. They're all trying to top trump each other. This dude's going to be back this weekend trying to top trump Nick Ball's last performance, obviously, against Isaac.
That's what they do, yeah. The Moreno, who's fighting Cain, he boxed Dennis McCann last year and got schooled. Dennis McCann boxed his head off for 8 rounds. But you will see the difference here. I'm a massive Dennis McCann fan, don't get me wrong. Kid is an incredibly good boxer. Andrew Cain's a little wrecking machine. And you're going to see the difference here. Moreno got his head boxed off last time he was here. This time he's going to get his head punched off. Cain does not stick around, man. He does not fuck about. Mm. One day down the line, Cain versus Dennis the Menace could be something quite fucking special.
Right here, right now,
we don't need to be doing that right here, right now. What I'm saying is, Andrew Cain, do not blink. The kid's an assassin, man. He's an assassin. Last time we were at a show in Liverpool, actually, he was ringside. He was watching Peter McGrail. We were sitting ringside. I thought, there's Andrew Cain there. I can make sure to say hello to him before he goes. And I looked over, and he stared right at me, and I thought, he'll kind of like, you know, raise an eyebrow, let on, like, as you do when you're...
And then
me way in, then. Then I'll head over, shake his hand, say, congratulations on your last performance. Big fan, speak to you soon. And he just looked right through me like he was ice, and I just thought, fuck that, I'm not going anywhere near that kid. He's got absolutely nothing friendly about him. Even when he's outside of the ring, he's a fucking terrifying little fella. So yeah, man, Andrew Cain, put your money on him. And if you see him in the street, just give him your money. That's my only advice. If he wants it, give him it.
That's Friday night at your call. So if you're going down there, you're in for a bit of a treat. On Friday as well, you've got Fan Long Meng taking on Jean Pascal in the light heavyweight division. Fan Long Meng's legit. Nice little name for him to be getting stuck into. And then on DAZN have got a show on as well. In Bilbao, you've got Kerman Lejarraga taking on JJ Metcalf.
Yeah.
There you go. We haven't seen JJ out for a bit. Obviously, we've seen him in some good domestic dust-ups that he's been on the wrong end of. Big opportunity for JJ. Obviously, away from home in Spain, in Bilbao. Taking on a legit operator at European level. Big fight.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a massive fight for him. And obviously, JJ had that incredible fight with Ted Cheeseman where he just, you know, I think he learned a lot in that fight with Cheeseman where he was getting hurt and instead of conserving energy, he was trying to fight his way through rounds, which he clearly lost already. And you were watching it going, you're going to burn yourself out, Jay. And that's exactly what happened. You know, he just completely and fucking exhausted down the stretch and Cheeseman got a great win finish. And then he went straight into the Kieran Conway fight. That was another great fight. And, you know, he just got nipped in that one. I think he lost on by a round or two against Conway. So, of course, he's being brought in here as an opponent. It's in Bilbao, it's in Spain, it's in La Granja's fucking, you know, home nation. They think they've got something a bit special with this guy. They brought him back here. You know, after suffering a few losses, they've got a load of wins on his record now. He's a big puncher. He's scary. He looks the fucking part. He's got... And the difference here is that I feel like there's no pressure on JJ Metcalf. I feel like he's going over to Spain as an opponent. And I bumped into his dad on Monday. I bumped into Shane, my old fucking mate, the old shorts.
Can I just stop you there for a second? Has someone just rung you because your microphone has now gone into Dalek mode, mate? Are you back? Go and speak.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes, I've got you now. I've got you now. Go on, carry on. Go on. You bumped into Shea. How many times have I got to tell you, right?
Yeah, I bumped into...
How many times have I got to tell you to switch your phone off? How many times?
Guess who it was? Tell me who it was.
It's your dad.
Who rings every fucking Monday morning? My dad. He rang me again. I've lost count of amount of times. Don't ring on a Monday morning. And he rings every Monday morning, just desperately wanting to get on the show. But yeah, I bumped into Shay. Anyone doesn't know, those shorts are where when we raised a shed load of money, me and Shay, we did a charity thing a long time ago. Part of my preparation for that, I was sparring JJ, as everybody should be aware now. He was novice ABA champion at the time. He gave me two black eyes with one right hand. Massive fan of JJ.
Yeah, exactly.
Massive fan of JJ, such a nice kid, fantastic family, of course. I've got so much time for his dad, it's unbelievable. But I bumped into him and said, listen, how's things going? He said he's been to New York. He went over there with Beefy, of course. He's part of that camp now with the lads in the gym. With JoJo McNally and that and Declan. He's part of that setup now. He said he's been to New York. His head's in a good place. He really fancies it. We know we've been brought in as opponents, but he's learnt a lot and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So they're talking a good talk, man. I'm really looking forward to Friday. And, you know, for someone like Jay with a couple of losses, you know, look at the guy in the opposite corner. Look at Leharanje. He lost two as well early on in his career. He's come back. There's absolutely no reason why he can't. You've got to be in it to win it, man. If you can pick up that European title, I think it's a WBA, whatever.
If
you can pick up a fucking belt, it's a belt in it, so...
No.
Yeah, good luck to
you. No, don't you dare do that, right? Just because it's your mate, if he picks up a... No. The belt's bullshit.
Irrelevant.
The guy that he's fighting is a legit European operator. This is big. It's away from home. If he can get something here, this is big. He's up against it. Don't get me wrong. He's not the favourite going into this fight. But if
Well, Lacharanja's two losses were fucking the main man, weren't they? Avanesian.
Yes.
You know, so if you can be the second guy to beat him, to stop him, then amazing. What a springboard for his career to get back on track. So good luck to him.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Then we move into Saturday. Told you there's a lot to keep your eyes on over this weekend. It's my birthday weekend, by the way, just to let everybody know.
50.
Fuck off. We'll do the zone first because this is where our excitement's at. Obviously, you've got Boazzi versus Spider. Craig Richards taking on Joshua Boazzi. On the undercard, you've got Robbie Davis Jr. in there as well. That's a good little fight for him against Javier Molina. But it's all on this main event. I know that there's names on there that people will recognise and you'll probably want us to preview them. What's the point, man? It's about the main event. The main event is where it's at because how long have we been shouting, these British light heavyweights, you need to start dancing with each other. And then Frank put the show on between Yard and Lyndon Arthur, got the ball rolling a touch. There's a couple of others now starting to make those fights happen.
Yeah.
And Boazzi in particular is one of those guys that we've been saying since he finished, obviously, 2016 Olympics, comes out and it's meandered. We've got to be honest, the career so far has meandered. It's ticked along, whereas other people like a Coley, for example, have just gone like that. Fuck off. So, here we go. This is where we find out whether Joshua Boazzi is going to do something. And I know that people are going to think to yourself, what are you talking about, man? Even if he gets beat, surely he can come again. Yes, he can. Yes, he can. But with all due respect, Craig Richards, I think, has improved so much. He has surprised a lot of people. He's been absolutely brilliant. And people look to the Bivol fight and they'll think, look what he did in the Bivol fight and all this type of stuff. Listen, I've said publicly, I think Bivol just slowed down in the back end of that fight, which allowed Craig Richards to get in there and get a little bit more success. No disrespect to him. That's what I think happened in that particular fight. Boazzi has got a good opponent, a strong opponent who'll fancy himself this weekend. This is the proper test for Boazzi to see if he's going to go up. This is where we're at.
Yeah, 100% agree with you, unfortunately. 15 fights, 13 knockouts, similar to Boots, which one's been memorable? You know, which one really jumps off the page for Boazzi?
Yeah.
It's a shame because what there's nothing not to like about Boazzi.
Oh, he's a
fucking talented kid, great to talk to. Yeah. You know, he's well educated. You know, his backstory's amazing. You know, his family, you know, very much made him put education at the forefront of his development, even alongside his Team GB boxing. Like, he's a fucking fantastic character. But his career has been shit, pretty boring, to be honest with you. He's done pretty much...
You just cut there for a second and it sounded like you just went, yeah, his career's been pretty shit.
I did.
Did you? Bronze medal from the Olympics in his back fucking pocket,
no,
son.
I mean, his pro career is just, it just hasn't really ignited, you know? It's, let's be honest. Guy couldn't really sell a ticket in the UK. He couldn't sell a ticket because... At no point have we been bought in. Yes, he's 15-0 with 13 knockouts, man. We should be proper high on this guy. But it's taken so long to get us here. Yeah. And every opponent at every stage, you're like, Blatty's going to beat him. Or Blatty will beat him. And it doesn't matter how many fucking Ryan Fords and, you know, oh, this guy's undefeated, this Marco Kalic is undefeated, he's this, he's that. Come on, man. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not stupid. Give him a real fight. I think this is his first real fight. I think he's the favourite for a reason because of the potential that he's got, the talent that he's got.
Do you think he wins?
I think he does win, but I'm basing that on potential, not from what I've seen. Because Craig Richards,
mate,
regardless of what we think... Yeah, exactly.
On eyes.
Regardless of what we think about the Bivol performance, about Bivol potentially taking it easy to, you know, unlock a certain cinnamon person, then regardless of that, it doesn't fucking matter. Craig Richards shouldn't be thinking like that. Craig Richards should be thinking, that guy who spanked Canelo, I fucking give him a fight, man. I'm world class. Boazzi's beat nobody. He's beat absolutely nobody since he turned pro. I'm world class. Let's see what he's all about. That is going to work one of two ways. Either we're right, Richards has been there, done it. Okay, he never won the T-shirt, but he's had that experience. He's got that in the locker, got that confidence in himself. And Boazzi's going to come up against someone that actually fucking his game and fancies it. Mm. Or Boazzi is that good. He's just not necessarily been matched up very well. And now he's got an opponent whose game... Good luck, because Boazzi's going to turn it on. I think Boazzi, for me, is intelligent enough as a fighter, and I'm bought in on him as a person to think this matchmaking, this career, the way it's meandered along, changing of coaches and all that kind of stuff, safety first, let's be honest, his career's been safety first. Let's make sure he keeps winning rather than develops. I'd like to think he's intelligent enough for that work to have been done in the gym. Maybe away from prying eyes, and now he's ready to be unleashed. We're going to see the true Joshua Boazzi. I feel like I've got to think like that because I do want him to succeed. I do genuinely believe if it all clicks into place, kid could be a world champion. But I can't base that on anything I've actually seen inside the pro ring yet because he's beaten C-level fighters. Mm-hmm. I would say Craig Richards is absolutely a B-level fighter. He would probably say A-level fighter. So we're going to find out on Saturday night, you're right, what Josh Boazzi is all about. If he looks sensational and he stops Craig Richards, next week on this show, I will be driving the Josh Boazzi bus. I'll be, boop, boop, let's go, kids. We're going to a world title. But on Saturday night, that's when he punches my membership card or not, because there's so many questions that need answering about Josh Boazzi, and I think we're going to get some answers on Saturday for sure.
Mate, London Pride, man. This is going to be a tight fight. It's going to be tight as fuck. I can see either of them just edging it 7-5. That's where I think this is going. Either of them. We'll find out though. Saturday, can't wait for it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great fight.
Now, like we tell you all the time, there's far too fucking many belts in boxing, and here's a little bit more frustration for you because we do have a WBC interim super middleweight title on the line. That's right. We know that we've got an undisputed super middleweight champion in Sol Canelo Alvarez, and we think that he's coming back down to 168 to defend some of those crowns because the sanctioning bodies like that fucking 12%, don't they? They like that coin, especially when Canelo's knocking 30 million out of the park, man. They like to get weighed in. So I don't think anybody's taking his belts off him anytime soon. Hence, an interim title from the WBC. Bish, bash, bosh. But I kind of like the person that's involved in this interim title. David Benavidez taking on David Lemieux. Lemieux hits like a train. He only fights one way. I think he's made for Benavidez.
Yeah.
It's perfect for Benavidez to look fucking amazing. Benavidez goes in there, looks amazing, creates this massive, massive noise where the Mexican fight fans go, we need to see Canelo versus Benavidez. It's going to make a shitload of dough. And then obviously because he's got an interim title, then the WBC can say, Canelo, come on, you know, shall we have a little bit of a dance? Shall we make it happen? Shall we do the undisputed thing? Let's do it. Benavidez Canelo is the thing that I would love to see. And yeah. I think Benavidez looks brilliant this weekend against Lemieux.
Yeah, he's absolutely made for him, you're right. I like Lemieux. And to be fair to Lemieux, man, he's been, you know, since his loss to Billy Joe Saunders when he just, you know, he got embarrassed a bit that night. I think he's gone 6-7-0 since. You know, he's put some wins together. I think he's only like 33 or something like that. Yeah. I don't think he's that old. He's not as old as you think.
Thing is, I've seen the kid box. I've seen him box and he's been brilliant. But he very rarely does that. He likes to fight.
Because he likes to fight.
He likes to have a scrap. That's it. And I think that's made for Benavidez.
Yeah. And you know what? As much as I like Benavidez, you know, kid's fucking undefeated, flying, can punch. He is still like a work in progress. And okay, he's 25 years of age, so maybe he should be a work in progress at 25 still. But there's moments in Benavidez where he does look wild. He can get ragged. He can't be outboxed. If Lemieux approaches this fight the way he should, he could nick rounds. He could fucking, you know, he could really put the pressure on Benavidez to start throwing wild shots. And when he does that, okay, he's massively dangerous because his hands are heavy. But Lemieux, there's a path to victory here for Lemieux if he sticks to a game plan, if he stays regimented. The problem is Benavidez has got that youth and that exuberance and that fucking owl. You can land one, mate, because when I land, you're going to go to kip. He's got that real power in him. And I think that, for me, is going to be the tell-all moment. I think Benavidez scores a sensational knockout. And I just pray he rocks that microphone, man. He's got to rock that microphone. He's got to scream for that Canelo fight.
Just one name. That's what you got to say. Yeah, exactly that. And then we've got another interim belt on the line. And this is a bit of a mess, this situation, because it's the interim WBO middleweight championship, which is Demetrius Andrade, right? He was supposed to be fighting Zach Parker this weekend coming.
Yeah.
That fight's fallen off because Demetrius Andrade's injured, which was for the 168 interim title.
That's going to say that was up at super middle, yeah.
Yeah. Now the WBO have pulled ordering that fight, because it's going to take too long for Demetrius Andrade to be fit and ready and rocking and rolling. So is Demetrius Andrade staying at 160? What's happening? Nobody knows what's happening fully with this situation. Yeah. So we've got an interim. Because I thought by the time we came to this fight It'd would have be been full. Upgraded to the full title, yeah. But yeah. It's not. Is it still at the moment, it's still interim WBO middleweight.
So was that why Eubank pulled out? Because it was the interim belt and not the full world title belt?
I don't even know if Eubank was ever offered it. I just know that he was highly in the rankings, right. And let's be straight, the dude that's fucking in there, Zhanibek, is legit.
He's a fucking monster.
He's fucking legit. I mean, I was chatting to a mutual mate of ours about 2-3 weeks ago, and he said, it's amazing how you guys know about fucking Uzbeks and Kazakhs and all these types of people. Said, mate, listen, all you've got to do is keep an eye on half the fucking Olympians and those elite amateurs that come out, because they're all fucking in the same camps doing what they're doing. And just keep an eye on X, Y, Z. Anyway, Zhanibek's been on that radar for some period of time now. There's a reason why every fucker's avoided him. Yeah. God bless Danny Dingham. Fair play, right, for sticking his hand up and having this opportunity. Him. Because to get an opportunity to fight for the interim title this weekend, probably not going to come round too often in Danny Dingham's life. And for him to take on Zhanibek, you got to fear for him. Zhanibek, he is proper thunder, mate, is what's happening this weekend. And he will... Yeah. Listen, we tipped him at the start of the year. Keep an eye on this dude, because I actually... What, do you know at the start of the year when we made our predictions? Mm-hmm. And I said that Demetrius Andrade will get beat this year. The reason why I said it was this guy. I thought that this guy would get made his mandatory. That's why Andrade's fucked off, man. Because this dude's fucking legit, mate. He'll become champion this weekend and he'll do it in good style.
Yeah, and you know, I know he's a Kazakh, but I think he's based out of Vegas. All his fights are in Vegas. Yeah. You know, he's headlined... The MGM, he's headlined at the Mandalay Bay, he's headlined everywhere. I think this one's at the Resorts World in Vegas. He's becoming a big Vegas ticket seller. And unfortunately for Danny Dingham, And listen, Danny's in it, man. It's similar to Jay Metcalf. You've got to fucking be in it to win it. And if you can get a win, you can change your life. And Danny Dignam can change his life. However, he's going to feel... He is thousands of miles away, but he's going to feel like he's millions of miles away from where he's come from, which is, with all due respect to Danny, Brentford Leisure Centre, your call, like... to headline it in Las Vegas. It's the shit dreams are made of. And that's part of the reason why we love boxing, man. Danny Dignam has gone from the fucking Brentwood Leisure Centre to having his name up in lights in Las Vegas fighting for an interim world title. That's incredible. You know, you very rarely see that in other sports. This guy gets this Rocky Balboa-style moment to go in there and to change his life forever. In one 12-round fight. That's beautiful, man. That's why we love boxing. But Rocky was a movie. This is real life. And, you know, this dude is fucking legit, man. He is a fearsome puncher. Just look at the people he's stopped recently. Big, strong, fucking Rob Brandt, a big unit. And damn, strong as anything, man. Danny's just... I hope Danny's corner team are going to look after him. That's all I will say. He's got nothing to lose and everything to gain.
Yeah, correct.
But he needs to be looked after as well because, you know.
Yeah, I think this weekend, Zanibek...
No brave corner him.
Alim Kaninouli will be the name that everybody's going, fuck! Did you see that dude at the weekend?
There exactly.
There you go. So that's your boxing this week. Loads of Friday action, loads of Saturday action. I haven't got TV channels, by the way, for Zanibek or the David Benavidez fight. Obviously, Boats is on DAZN. You've got DAZN with JJ Metcalf and Lechanga. And you've also got BT for Brad Foster on Friday night. So there's loads of knocking about. If Sky sign any of them fights, we'll let you know, man. They may already have signed him. I just haven't checked the TV listings. But if they have, we'll stick them up on our social media so you can get stuck into it. Job done. Job done. Happy?
My hangover's just kicked in again.
Has it? We'll stick around, mate, because we're going to do a UFC show now, son, so everybody can get stuck into a little bit of that as well, Wiz.
Mega.
Thank you very much for listening. We are available on iTunes. You can subscribe there. You can also get us on our website, fightdisciples.com, and we're on YouTube if you want to watch. We appreciate all your comments, whether you're leaving those comments on iTunes, whether you're leaving comments on our social media channels or on YouTube. All good stuff. Make sure you like, ring the bell, come back week after week, so therefore we can keep talking about the beautiful game of boxing, because boxing's really, really nice. It's just the judging that's shit. That's what we fucking have a go at. Boxing's ace, judging shit. All right? Thank you very much for watching or listening. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.